Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Swung on, lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 201. I am your host, Matt Lyons. And on this week's episode, we'll talk about some potential, not potential, but actual changes to the podcast coming up. Talk about the Guardians going 1-2 in spring training so far, what that means, which, spoiler alert, is basically nothing. Thoughts on the new baseball rules coming out. Over-under previews, we'll go over some that have happened on Covering the Corner already and see which ones we agree and disagree on. Join me for all that and more. Another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
It's good to get some swings in before the season kicks off. Huh? A little spring training of our own where we all feel terrible and don't know how to speak to each other and talk about players like Bob Ruth.
Bob Ruth. Listen, that happened before we recorded, and you just had to bring it up that I called Babe Ruth Bob Ruth. It's fine. His sweet wife, Helen, is...
I'm sure there's a real man named Bob Ruth out there somewhere.
I'm sure he just slightly misspells it when he signs checks and stuff, just so people have to hesitate for a second.
Bub Ruth.
He's trying to write Babe, he writes Bub. Yeah, there's baseball happening, but before we get to that semi-fun baseball, I guess.
It exists, and so it's fun. And you know, the meaninglessness of it really teaches us about life itself, the meaninglessness of life, right? It's just a nihilistic hellscape we all live in, so why not enjoy something that has no meaning or reason for being? Anyway, go on, Matt.
You know, spring training has taglines. That should be it, just in small font under it. That should be the official tagline of spring training.
Nothing matters anyway.
Eat Arby's. I'm sure some people saw that SB Nation as part of, I don't know,
good business.
Cutting back. Totally good. Normal business practices. They just sort of lopped off all the NHL coverage, which stinks for all those guys. It's the whole sites are just not going to be covered anymore. But they also did, essentially, as far as I know, every single podcast, which for us, it's not really, I mean, a huge deal as far as what we made from it. It was essentially nothing. Split between four people was nothing divided by four. But it stinks for a lot of the bigger places where they relied on it. And this was like, I think some of the bigger ones, this was an actual like full-time job for them. But so I wish them the best and what they're doing next. But for us, it's not going to really change a whole lot because what they're essentially doing is just giving us the feed and just transferring over so we can still take it. So what you'll see is eventually, it was supposed to happen recently, but we don't have permissions yet to like rebrand everything, which they're trying to get. So in a few weeks, maybe, hopefully, you'll get the same podcast. It'll be downloaded. It'll just be a different name. We just can't use... Frankly, I worked weeks to come up with the Covering the Corner podcast name. So
it's sad. You slaved over that one, man. I can't use it.
But now we have to change it. After all the hard work of coming up with the Covering the Corner podcast, we got to change it now. So we think we have one that we're going to use, which I think is a fun one. And we'll have that coming up. So you'll see just the new podcast. It'll just be us. It'll just be, you won't have to change anything or click anything to download. It's literally just changing the feed over and letting us rebrand it because they're not, it's our podcast now. It sort of was before, but now it completely is.
It really is. We can do whatever we want. We can talk about anything. We can talk about Brian Lavastida for three episodes in a row. It's going to be fantastic.
Don't spoil the first three episodes of our new podcast.
Come on, I can't man. Wait That's to talk doing. About every single part of him. His hair, his eyes, his left hand.
Episode four is Yu Chang for three more episodes. We're going to talk about all the best players that have ever played.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to let everybody know. We were going to wait until we rebranded it to restart, but since it's taking a while anyway, we might as well do a couple more while we're still this podcast to kind of have a runway into the new one so you sort of knows what's going on. I think I'm just going to keep the numbering too. I'm not going to change and go back to episode one.
Then it looks like we've been doing the other one for a long time.
Too, 200 episodes, perfect, man. Right? We can't erase that.
No.
200 episodes of pure quality.
Mm-hmm. No, it's nice. It's fun. Plus, you know what's else is great? We love talking about baseball to each other. It's fantastic. So, you know, if nothing else, we have that going for us.
Talking to each other? With each other?
Talking at each other.
Talking in the general auditory vicinity of each other about baseball. It's fun. I've missed doing this podcast. For various reasons, we just kept, I think 99% of them were me not able to do it, but now we can do it again.
Oh, and there was so much going on too. I'm sad we didn't get to cover anything over the winter, right? Like when anyway.
Josh Bell
happened and
Roman Quinn.
Arbitration.
I guess arbitration could have been one because, I mean, good Lord, sure. Corbin Burns. We learned why the Guardians like to avoid arbitration so much because that seems like a nightmare. Sad.
Yeah.
I wrote about that I'm glad that they do that because that guy could be Shane Bieber. It's like the exact same situation that Corbin Burns was in. Like, they could have taken him into court and pointed to, like, his injuries, his declined velocity, his all this stuff. They could have said he wasn't ready to pitch on short rest in the playoffs. That's why they lost. They could have, like, really done some things to try to drive down his value that would have sounded awful and would have felt awful. And
seems a great way to treat people, honestly. Just point out the reasons they're
bad. That's how you treat your employees and your people that you want to pay millions of dollars to stick around your city when they can go anywhere else. That's what you want to do, yeah.
Well, and the Burns thing was funny, too, because, like, it was, like, a difference of, like several thousand dollars.
Yeah, which it was, for, like, $700,000, which for this is
anyone listening to this podcast would be life-changing. But for that, like, with the numbers within that deal, it was very small as it was. So it's just, like, why are you doing this for this much money? Like, he's the best pitcher in the National League right now, or one of, you know? It's like, do you not want to be good? Or I don't know, whatever.
And I guess we don't really know, like, if the Guardians pay the higher end of what the difference is, or if they've just built this place that's, like, quality enough that players like Shane Bieber will take a little bit lower to stay. I think either way, they're coming out on top there compared to doing whatever the hell the Brewers are doing, which is not good. It's just fun to be on this end of the rebuilding part now. Like,
yes.
The Guardians' super short rebuild was, as much as we say they didn't tear it down and tank or whatever, but they did kind of, like, slowly strip away for a few years. Yeah, and that was not a fun couple of off seasons, but, like, this one was just fun. It seems like this was the most enjoyable offseason since, like, 2016, 2017, really. Like, when they got Edwin and they were coming off the World Series, like, this has the same vibe of that one of just, you're on, like, the upswing of whatever happens this year is just fun. And then hopefully it lasts for more than a season this time, which would
really it would be nice if for the second time in the last, what, 20 years, I guess, that the quote-unquote window is 190 games, basically. What are the Brewers doing, by the way, Matt? I don't understand that team at all. Like, I can't get
it feels like they're doing a really bad version of what the Guardians did.
It kind of does, right? Like, they're just like, I know that I'm pretty sure they're good, but I can't figure out what the hell. Are they any good? So anyway,
they're trying to do that balancing act of, like, not tearing it all down, but also doing it the worst way possible, which is, I mean, not that the Guardians haven't been cheap on the way to here, but they've also made a bunch of really smart moves and extended Jose Ramirez and signed Josh Bell. So they're on the upswing now. It's fun.
Maybe they have the half of what it takes to be like an organization like the Guardians, which is you have to have the excellent, you know, infrastructure to develop players, but also the savvy to trade them at the right time for what ends up being half the core of your future.
Yeah. Which, oh boy, that Mike Clevenger trade is looking mighty good right now for so many reasons. Yeah.
That's one of the best trades of the last 15 years, I think.
I mean, easily, right? At least for the limiting to what I know about the Guardians, like the Guardians for sure, right? Like, narrowing the scope down to just that. I can't think of another trade that's been.
I mean, outside of maybe like the Bartolo Colon trade.
But that was more than 15?
Yeah, that was 20 some odd years ago almost. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah,
so if you limit it before that, I'd say it's the best trade since that at least.
Because, I mean, if Naylor continues his pathway, who else did they get on that one? They got, what's his name's gone?
They got Arias, Cal Quantrill, and Naylor and Joey Cantillo. And Cantillo is another one who's going to look really good. Who, like, if they imagine trading one player for four player and all four players hit, that's
kind of on the path.
That's what it looks like it might happen.
And, like, you know, just if we want to just get into it, I mean, Arias hasn't looked bad so early on in the spring training. I mean, that's the thing about spring training, too, is it's just, I can look at the numbers all I want, but really it's, you have to focus just on what the players look like at the plate or whatever the hell, however you want to look at it. And I think a lot of guys on the Guardians have just looks like they got someone like Kwan. Looks like he's just picking up where he left off. Someone like Naylor looks much more confident and vigorous. Maybe his leg feels good. I watched a little bit of Jimenez hit the ball hard a few times. And again, at the end of the day, that's really all we can hope for. Like, you never know what they're working on. You know, it's like, to draw a parallel to another sport I enjoy, Formula One, they just did their preseason testing. You don't know what the hell is going on. None of the times matter or anything like that. But, like, because they're all trying to do something different every single day. But what I've seen, at least with the guards, is that they all look fine. Pitching-wise, we want to talk about, please, Zach.
I mean, they haven't exactly looked fine. I mean, Bieber looks like he's already in the postseason already. The clock is not going to affect him whatsoever, and it clearly didn't in his start. But Zach Plesac. I don't think that's the clock. I don't know if that's it's hard to, you can't be too bad because they're too down on him because it's the first one of spring training. But
yeah,
also that's just kind of how he looks all the time, so it's hard to differentiate it too much.
I'd forgotten about the throwover thing too until they started talking about it during his
That's one of his strengths, and he can't.
Okay, that's the thing. He's good at picking people off, and he's good at like controlling the running game. And like now that it's so much more litigated against, what is he going to do? Because like at this point, like he throws over twice, and then basically they're just going to steal on him. Like they're going to do that every single time. Like I admit I don't know a ton about Mike Zunino's arm. I'm assuming he's a good defensive catcher, but.
But he was also injured on it. I mean, it was a non-throwing arm, but that's kind of affect how you're throwing there. So
right, exactly. So I don't know. That'd be a big question mark. What would that look like? That's going to be a bit of a breaking in period because this is the first time I really had a catcher that I'm not used to in a while. I guess they had what's his name last year too, Hedges.
I think we knew what Hedges. It was really good defensively. Like when he came, that was another.
No, that's true. He was a known. Like I actually knew about it. I don't really know a lot about Mike Zunino, unfortunately. So.
I mean, I know he had that one really good offensive season. I know he's not as good as like Hedges or the other defensive catches they usually get. It's kind of a different flavor than what they're used to, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, just kind of hoping that he'll hit 31 home runs again. Yeah.
Yeah. Or hit anything at all.
Yeah.
Would be nice.
Hit literally one home run and he'll be a success. Jesus Christ.
Although it has been fun. I like watching Bo Naylor. I'm so excited. Did you notice that him and Josh have kind of similar batting stances? I mean, Josh is obviously built different than Bo Naylor, but they both stand like really open, and it's funny looking at. You can tell they're related. I know it's stupid to say because they're obviously related, but you can tell when they're at bat, like they've come up and
played. They're brothers. Each other, yeah.
So those guys sit in the stands. Those guys have the same last name. Did you know they're related? Yeah, it's
been. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just saying that's the fun thing about spring training is seeing all these guys you're not going to see. I mean, like Roman Quinn, we're probably not going to see him after the regular season starts, but he has 3 home runs already, and that's kind of fun.
Yeah, like what? I wonder what that does to a guy, right? Like because like Roman Quinn is someone who's completely not on anybody's radar for the most part, right? Like I don't even know if he's on the 40 man or not or whatever, but he hit 2 home runs, and he's got 3 now in spring training. Like there's always a way to hit your way onto a team. Like Kwan did it last year; he forced their hand by saying you have to play me this year, and it worked out. Who will that be? Will they get one of those this year? Right? Will because Arias has been getting a little bit of run now. I wonder if they're hoping he'll be more of a regular player or some sort of bench guy. Like,
oh, I'm for sure. I think either him or Freeman is like they're essentially the same. I think in the eyes of the front office, maybe Gabriel Arias is a little bit better because of his power and he's proven a little bit more on defense. But one of those two is going to be like a super utility guy somewhere, like playing first, second, all over in the infield. But like Roman Quinn. I think he's closest to Yu Chang, who was really good for a couple of years in the spring training and worked his way in. I just don't know if Roman Quinn, if there's room for him to squeeze his way in like Chang did, because Chang was a prospect coming up and he was already on the 40 man. But Roman Quinn's like 29 years old and he just has a long track record of not being very good in the majors. So I think he just ends up as AAA depth at center field, which is kind of what he always was. But I mean, I'm happy for him as a person that he gets to show off somewhere like this.
It's maybe fun to hit home runs, I bet. So, you know, yeah.
I'm sure he's doing anything to show that the half season in Tampa Bay wasn't a fluke. So, I mean, this is good for him. I just don't think this is going to stick around on the Guardians. As fun as it is to watch and think, like, a guy is just going to win out because of a really good spring training. You're absolutely right about Kwan last year, but I don't know if that happens very often or if Roman Quinn can do it. But
I'm worried that we're circling back around to that conversation we had a bunch last year, the logjam of somewhat of mediocrity, where they had like all these guys who are pretty good, and you're like, I don't know, but who's the good one? Like, I don't know. Like, they have a top prospect, but like they don't have enough top. They don't have any like blow it out the water top prospects. And so, where do we go from here? And I'm not to say that this is circling around Quinn, but someone like Arias, like, what if he ends up being good enough? Like, where do they go from there? Or any of these guys, Will Brennan, right? Like,
yeah. I feel like the floor of this conversation is a lot higher than it was in previous years.
Oh, heavens, yes. Oh, my goodness gracious, yes. Yeah. I mean,
Nolan Jones was, the ceiling seemed high, but the floor was underground. And I remember being excited about Daniel Johnson and Greg Allen and all these outfielders who, it didn't seem like the front office was very jazzed about them, but we all were. But this time it feels like it's both ways. Like, everybody's excited about Gabriel Arias and potentially Tyler Freeman and all these guys coming up. I think it's... The floor is higher. It's the same exact conversation. You're right. It's just
like exactly. The floor is a little higher. But now we get to look at whether it's a baseball prospectus annual, and they have the second highest, farm system ranking, or you know, fan the Zips did their projections of the top 100 prospects, and the Guardians have the same number as the Dodgers, like it's or more than the Dodgers or something like that. Like
they had more top 100, but not more top 200.
Was that what it was?
Yeah. Because it's Zip, so he just does like as many all as he them. Can do.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So the Guardians had more in the top 100, but the Dodgers, like their depth is unbelievable. Well, they had like 16 in the top 200. Exactly.
We're all good, actually, yeah. Oh, no, we need another three-win player. There he is. Perfect.
Okay. Just grab him, yeah. But yeah, it's weird, too, that like pitching isn't the place that's the interesting place to talk about the Guardians anymore, because they brought back everybody. It's the same exact five as last year. Mm-hmm. And like the layer right under them isn't that exciting. I mean, like you got Pilkington and Hunter Gaddis looked really good in his brief start, but then there's a little bit of a time gap, I think. I mean, Xavion Curry is another one who could be pitching right away. But Cody Morris is hurt. I think he'd be the most exciting one if he was actually there. Mm-hmm. But since he's not, I mean, like, there's this gap before you get to Gavin Williams, Joey Cantillo, Tanner Bibee, and then of course Daniel Espino, who's now injured again, but he could potentially be back in like a month or two. So he's not, the season isn't over for him or anything, but yeah, he's still a little ways away when he comes back. So
who do you think is going to show up first? And whose job do you think they'll take?
I mean, depending on how long Cody Morris is injured, I think he's the front one to get more innings if they think he can handle it. But otherwise, just like they're going to just throw Connor Pilkington or Hunter Gaddis in there.
Hell yeah. Pilkington. Gaddis. Yeah. Gotta love Hunter Gaddis.
He's just a big hairy man. I mean, unless you're talking about like taking over a spot and keeping it kind of thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I wonder who that would be. I wonder if it would be.
I still think it's going to be Gavin Williams. Like, remember my bold take early last year was that he was going to pitch last year, and that
I do remember that.
But I think I'm going to do it again this year. I think it's slightly less bold now, but I think he pitches this year and like towards the end. Mm-hmm. I would have to imagine Zach Plesac, right, is the lowest who's going to be, because there was even talks they were trying to trade him at the trade deadline last season. They just couldn't find anything for him. I don't know if they would this year, but at some point, if Gavin Williams is ready, you've got to just kind of push him off to the side somewhere.
I mean, like you said, the window is kind of open now, like full on. Like you win a division, and it's like, and also the, you know, the rest of the division did not get good.
They like, sure did not.
I mean, the Twins brought back players that they had before, but also still have gaps, and some of their prospects are not looking like they panned out. But
and the Tigers and Royals, man, like they are just spinning in the dirt as the Tigers.
Jesus Christ, dude! I guess so not to. Not to beat a dead horse, but good God, they're bad.
But let's beat this dead horse, because a decade of tanking and you have nothing if you're the Tigers. That's ridiculous.
Like, the Tigers are stink so much. Like, I remember when they signed Baez, I was like, good. Like, he's not good anymore. Like, he was good 3 years ago. What is this? Good for him getting paid, but Jesus.
And then Franmil Reyes is on the Royals now. Old friend alert.
Is that where he ended up? Yeah, I was just looking at his stats because I was writing the over-under for Josh Bell, and there's a reference that I had to make in there.
Yeah, I didn't notice until Royals Review tweeted that Franmil Reyes is a very large man. I was like, yes, I remember tweeting that. He's a very fun large man, but now he's very gone.
So it's ball hard. He just doesn't hit it very much. That's the key to it all.
Yeah, which I mean, speaking of, they've got like Junkanzie Noel, who's just a man who looks like he was made to hit baseballs extremely hard. So I'm excited for him.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Voluma XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
But the fact that he's my height, but like 35 pounds heavy, I'm good.
And it's all muscle. And it's just
and he's 15 years younger than I am. What a beast. What a monster. Hell yeah, dude.
And not to obviously make the comparison to Yordan Alvarez. I think that's a little bit far ahead. But they both have this thing like when they hold the bat, I don't know any way to describe it other than it looks like all the energy of their movement goes into the bat. Like especially Yordan Alvarez, like watching him in the playoffs. Every tiny little move he does, it's all going straight into the bat. Like he's just stable as a rock. Yeah. I feel like Junkenzie Noel has that a little bit too.
Junkenzie Noel hit 340 in 2021, which is something that, what's his name, also was that. Granted, that was in independent, or that was in rookie ball, low A and high A, but we'll just ignore all that and just decide it'll be good.
Yeah, he'll be fun. He's one of the ones that, like, we know we're not going to watch him soon, but I want to see him in spring training. We've gotten to see. Mm-hmm. A couple of times. I think he played in the outfield, but I didn't see that part of the game where he was playing.
Well, that's one of the fun reasons to watch more spring training is you get to see those guys because I'm never going to see them in person. You know, the closest they play would be Lynchburg. Are they still even there?
Yeah, down near DC. Yeah,
yeah. That's 3 hours away. So you know, I'm never going to see any of these players. So we see him in spring training. I'm like, oh, is he good? I don't know. My wicked scout eye can tell me that yes, he has the look.
This gigantic, muscly man is actually pretty good at baseball. Yeah, as it turns out. Do you have any thoughts on just the new? I mean, we're seeing a lot of the rules, like the pitch clock and the shift adjustment. It's all any broadcast talks about the entire game right now.
Yeah, it's. I mean, and you understand why. You know, I will say I was of all people, a football writer posted just a clip of that first game. The first game of spring training with the pitch clock, and I'm watching like the 10-second clip. I got very anxious, but that's because they had this massive clock right behind the home plate. I was like, I'm going crazy. I don't mind though. I mean, again, the pace is nice. I've been watching the game today. I was wondering like, who is this going to benefit? You know what I mean? Like, what type of, not even so much pitcher as hitter will this benefit? Like, there are obviously some hitters who like to take their time and. This is hyper small sample, but like Josh Naylor looked a little rushed at the plate, whereas like Stephen Kwan looked incredibly comfortable with the pace of pitch, with the pace of play. Will it help? I don't know. Pitchers like Eli Morgan, who I'm mentioning him because I'm currently rewatching the game and he's pitching, who you know has to rely on certain aspects of his game, like deception and things, like being able to keep that pace higher. Will that help him to get back in the hitters' heads, or when will it go sideways for pitchers? Like, it's more I'm curious more than excited or anything about it. I am hoping the bigger bases thing does actually make for more running, but we'll see how that plays out because, like, you know, it's like, well, how many bang bang plays has used to go in the defense's favor now to be a stolen base? It's like less than you think.
It's like I think they found out it's been like a percentage point more steals might happen with the smaller bases, but I think it's all little things that can add up to a better game. I mentioned
Go ahead. Like you said, it's all the little things. It's someone on Reddit posted today that you know the in the early goings games are on average 23 minutes shorter, which means there's actually things happening. Right, it's 23 minutes of dead time, effectively, cutting to whatever the hell's going on in the stands or close-ups of a manager's face or whatever, you know, or just a guy staring off into space contemplating, you know, his own existence, which is great. I think the bigger base things, like you said, Mike, was just completely negligible. I think the shift thing will be predominantly negligible. I was trying to figure out, I know they were talking about like who will see more hits and stuff. I think more so than the fact that guys will be shifted one way or the other, it's those little bloopers that might drop in a little bit more often than they used to. To what end? You know what I mean? So I do think the pitch clock is a good thing. I know I've read things in the past where it's the worry is that forcing pitchers to work this quickly might lead to more injuries because of like micro recovery or whatever. So we'll see how that plays out, but
I don't know. Might just not have to throw 1,000 miles an hour because this isn't a new thing working this fast. So far it hasn't been the pitchers who have struggled, right? Has there been a single actual pitcher violation? It's all been the batters haven't looked at the pitcher in time.
I
guess there was one today because the count started 1-1. Oh, Kanchak. Well, he asked for a ball. I don't know if they ever said if it's supposed to stop when they do that, but he asked for a ball and then it didn't stop and then he got the violation. But
it's guys like that who just have that long process. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But hey, just to draw a comparison to a different sport again, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo took forever at the foul line, and they made him speed up, and if anything, it made him better at the foul line. Like, I think he's having one of his best years shooting foul shots. So it'll be an adjustment period, right? They were talking about when they first introduced it in the lower levels, it was like you'd see like 2 a game for the first week and a half, and then like within like 3 weeks, it was like 1 every 2 games, maybe. And obviously there was the hilarious Braves Red Sox game the other day where that like ended on a violation.
Oh, it's going to be a playoff game that does that, and it's going to be hilarious. Amazing.
But I don't know. I think it's all good stuff because I love baseball, but I don't like – one complaint I saw somewhere, I don't know if it was on Twitter or something, but it screws up radio listening. Like it's just the pace is no longer there, and maybe that's just, if anything, the – radio guys who have been so used to being able to breathe a little more or finding those places to do those little like live reads of ads. Is that going to be a bit of a problem? Again, it just appeared for them, but
yeah. Well, and that's another thing, like too, that's just like people are complaining that it speeds up the game and changes it too much, but it's going back to what the game was. Like they've just been getting longer and longer with these guys doing it. So like the radio broadcasters, they used to have this speed. It's just naturally players went this fast because they weren't adjusting everything and didn't have quite so long of rituals. Yeah. I mean, there was like some once in a while, like Mike Hargrove, but it wasn't everybody did it all the time. And that's what they're trying to trim down.
He was like the fact that like there were men like Hargrove known as a human rain delay because he got his took a little bit too long. Yeah. And now it's like everyone kind of does this constantly all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if, and you know, I know someone posted on Twitter the other day. It's like, oh, this crazy new rule. Oh, wait, this rule has always been on the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the, that's the batter one. That you've always had to be ready in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
But exactly. It's always been an umpire.
And like,
judgment.
It's a listed number of seconds. Like, it was like 18 seconds or something like that. So I don't know.
They're actually enforcing the rules now, which I think is a benefit. And I think we're not helping talking about it now, but once people stop talking about it, it'll just fade in the background and games will be a little snappier and it'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. It's like with any rule change we've ever seen in any sport, right? They talk about it for a few weeks. The NFL, I think, is paramount to this, right? They change rules all the time that like completely change the shape of the game and then whatever. Or like in the NBA, there's no longer an illegal defense call or I wasn't alive for it, but the three-pointer. I'm sure for a little while that was a crazy deal, and then just people just stopped talking about it. But yeah, so like you said, I think like everyone's going to talk about it for the next 2 weeks, and then we're going to get to spring training, or into the regular season rather, and we're going to talk about it for another week or so. Every time there is a violation, if we were to chart the talking about it, it'll probably tick up a little bit, especially if it's a violation by an Aaron Judge or a... Who are other good players? Yeah.
Because so far it's been spring training. So when it happens, they're just like, oh, whatever. That's fine.
We're learning. Yeah. Silly boys. Like
silly fellas. But as soon as it's in the middle of a game or decides a game and a player freaks out about it and talks about it after the game is when it's going to be a thing again. But
because, like, honestly, what it is it is the league itself being forced to litigate something that umpires just stopped enforcing decades ago. And, like, if the umpires want to complain about it, so be it. They can complain all they fucking want. They're the ones who screwed up.
And I felt like a shill because every single rule the MLB has done recently, I'm a fan. I even like the Ghost Runner. It's grown on me. I like that they don't do it in the postseason and they keep it in the regular season. I think that's the perfect way to deal with that. Because I don't want to see a 17-inning game in July. But like the Rays and Guardians last postseason, give me that all day long in the playoffs. So
I mean, I guess it depends on the situation I'm in. If I have a day off and I'm just hanging out. And like,
but see, you'll never know. It could come on a West Coast game.
Therein lies the issue, Or am I staying up until 3 a.m. going, what the hell? Again, if it's one of those, sometimes I'll just take several days off in the summertime. I'll just watch, just watch baseball till 3 a.m. like a fucking degenerate, you know? Sometimes you want to have some degeneracy in your life. And
just a little bit of degeneracy.
Yeah.
There's the show title.
Ooh, write that down.
And even
what
like
is this about? OE baseball.
Even the 3-batter minimum, which I liked at the beginning anyway, but I think that one got more pushback. That I watched college baseball where they don't have that, and it is miserable. I forgot how much I hated that. It was the same as like the quote unquote strategy of a double switch with the pitching. Like, that's not fun strategy. Like, there's no fun watching a guy come out and pull somebody out. The strategy is like within an at bat. So it's more fun having 3 batters than get this matchup, go to commercial, switch them out, get this matchup. Like, the strategy of baseball to fun for me is player versus player more than that kind of stuff. So like the 3-batter one, I've been a fan of since the beginning, and I've loved it now. So like, I've liked every rule change they've done so far. I like all these ones this year so far. And
oh, the 3-batter one, I thought from the get-go was good because, like, obviously as a left-handed man, I've always loved a good loogie, a man whose job is to throw 2 pitches every other game. Like, that guy rules. The dream is still alive for old Merritt. But obviously, you know, that fades away a little bit because you have to be able to. Sam Henches, I think, is a great example of that, where he was in some way forced to shape himself into a pitcher that could get people on both sides of the plate out. I mean, granted, he couldn't get lefties out either his first year, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there.
A beast over there.
And now he is excellent in every single possible way.
Just wait, I'm telling you, Connor Pilkington, he's next. He's the next Tarl guy to go in there and be an amazing.
But I, like you said, I like all these rules. Like, I don't like the weird cynicism or whatever where it's coming from. That's not a right word here, but I think what I mean is that Rob Manfred can eat shit in general. I guess that's a stance I'm taking in general here.
Every stance I've ever had, just assume that's like a comma.
Yeah, that's there. Like, that's just, yeah. It's in subtitles or whatever. Yeah, this is what I really mean. But listen, I like going to baseball games as much as the next person, but like, I don't, like you said, I don't want to be there for 3.5 hours. I have other things I'd like to do. Even if a biggest fan as I am, I have left games before because I was like, this, it's hot. The game was 107 degrees. I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going home.
As Quincy Wheeler put it, like, you're not missing any of actual baseball. You're just missing guys standing around and adjusting.
Yeah, exactly.
Things. Like, you're not missing baseball. So I'm all for it. Yeah. But yeah, so on the website, on coveringthecorner.com, that's a website, right? We've been doing over and unders. That's kind of like a way to preview the season because we could just do a preview, but we've also, it would just be repeating the season review. So I figured we'll do over unders for Zips projections. And then for us here on this very podcast, we'll just kind of rapid fire go through them real quick if there's ones we agree on, because I don't think there's no sense in just both of us repeating the same over predictions. But if we disagree, we'll stop and argue about it. So the first one, Josh Naylor, Zips has him at 134 games, 19 home runs, 1.7 war. Do you have over or under on Mr. Josh Naylor coming back from, I mean, this will be his first full season. So.
Right. Well, so I was doing a little research because I'm currently writing the Josh Bell one. Only 14 guys who played predominantly first base crossed the 2-win mark last year, which I thought was interesting. Now, obviously, he's going to be playing a little bit of right field probably and DHing, which doesn't do any benefit to his playing, obviously. But I think he'll play more than 134 games, first of all. I think that's obviously a projection based on the fact that he missed a lot of time, right? And he was recovering from stuff. And at least in the early going, he looks healthy. That being said, being a first base less DH and getting more than about 2 wins isn't easy. Like, you have to be really, really good. And I don't know how good he is yet, whether he's going to be a platoon guy or what. I mean, the thing is, though, still 1.8 wins above replacement. It's so low where I'm just like, yeah, he'll probably cross that. Because I do expect him to hit like 25 home runs this year, if not more. And just looking at all those other numbers and the fact that he'll probably play 150 games and more accurately probably have 500 and some odd at bats, you know. I can go with an over on that one.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I mean, basically the same thing. I think it's a lot of these are, I think, over, but just barely. Like, just because I don't pick over or under, I pick over because I think he's going to get, like you, I think he's going to have over more than 130 games. But every projection system just has him god awful at first base on defense, which is fair. He hasn't been good.
Yeah.
But it's like double as bad as he was previously. It's pretty bad. I think he can be better than 117 WRC plus. I think he can get over 19 home runs.
I think that's a big one too. I think my expectation, I guess, is him to be more in the 125 range. Because what was he last year? He was, I think, just somewhere around whatever. Where are you? 331 weighted on base average. 117. So yeah, I think he'll be better than that. I think he'll be like more like a, because he really tailed off at the end of the year there.
Which that's understandable considering he his leg was annihilated and he came back.
Exactly, yeah. But like, I mean, obviously to say this man is going to double his wins above replacement career output sounds crazy, except that he's only played 325 total games, right?
Like, and last year was the only positive one. The right, only positive war he's ever had. So
right, exactly. So I think he'll be more of like a, especially if they're platooning him, those numbers will probably go up a little bit, but then of course the at-bat number might suffer, the plate appearance number might suffer a little bit, but I fully expect like a 275, 340, 480 kind of a line from him. So that's something I don't know how that will compare with WRC Plus this year with how offense will shake out, but
yeah.
I think he'll have more like a 340 weighted on base average, something like that. And
sounds fair.
I mean, yeah, I think that's what we'll be seeing this year.
Shane Bieber, they have him at 28 starts, 176 innings, 3.22 ERA, 3.7 WAR, under 10 strikeouts per nine, which I think is fair. Over under on this one for Bieber, 3.7.
It's 3.7.
4.9 WAR, which was pretty good.
Yeah, I think he's going to throw 200 innings this year. I mean,
yeah,
he did last year.
Four games inexplicably. I guess I don't know. It's just looking at the fact that he hasn't pitched. I mean, he's pitched at least 30 games in two out of the last three full seasons. So I don't really know why it's pulling there. But
I honestly think that COVID year has to be throwing things off too. You know, because like I don't know.
For that,
right? I don't know. One would have to assume. Like, he got better last year, right? His fielding independent pitching was excellent. His matchup was good. ERA was strong. The velocity thing is still obviously a problem.
But he's also kind of reinvented himself as a guy who can pitch like
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
Which I don't think Zips necessarily is picturing here. Because it has his strikeout rates going up, which I don't think necessarily happened. But I think he'll walk closer to the 1.62 of last year, too.
Well, and maybe I misremember that, but I feel like he was throwing harder towards the end of the year. Like, I think he was finally rounding back into shape of all things last year.
He was getting closer. He still wasn't quite, like, mid-90s Bieber.
But. Oh, no, yeah. But I don't think he'll be a 91 guy this year. I think he'll be more akin to what we saw in limited time in 2021 when he was more of, like, the 92 and just, yeah, sitting around 93. Because if he can be there, he's going to be tough. I think he might get more strikeouts. He's another kind of guy who I wonder if pace of play might help with him because he'll be able to just work guys more quickly and maybe he'll lean on that more heavily. But I think he'll be more like a 4.5 to 5 win player. I think he'll comfortably surpass that number.
Next one, Stephen Kwan. Zips has him at 7 home runs, 274, 350, 377, 110 WRC plus, 3.5 WAR. This one
he's going to hit 20. No,
he's going to hit 20 home runs.
I think he's going to hit 15 home runs this year, though.
I
think he's going to hit 15 home runs. I think he was starting to flash a little bit of power last year. Like his ability to get himself into the situations where he can turn and burn. I think last year was a feeling out, and I think he's going to be doing more of that. Yeah, I think he's going to be.
So I'm going to presume you say over. Presume you say.
Yes,
over.
I think he's going to be an all-star.
Oh yeah, that's it. That would work.
I'm excited for Stephen Kwan year two. It's going to be fun.
I think it's also extremely cool that Zips has him equal strikeouts and walks. I think usually projection systems don't believe they're going to strike out as little as they do, but every single one of them believes in Kwan doing this, which I think is really cool.
They keep on reminding you he didn't swing and miss for 116 pitches last year. I was like, what's happening?
Yeah,
I will say very early going, it's 6 at bats obviously, but he's been more aggressive. It seems like this year in spring training, at least maybe just seeing what that's like swinging earlier in the.
If you're gonna try it, might as well do it now.
Yeah, exactly. Just try a new thing. Like he's been the same hitter for forever, right? Like he's always done this. Why not try new things now? I'm just gonna see where it goes. That's why spring training is so hard to like do analysis on or whatever.
Yeah, mine's over on Stephen Kwan too. Over, but maybe not. Quite as much.
What was he last year? He was like 5 last year, wasn't he?
He was pretty close, yeah. He's really good.
Yeah, I think he'd be like a 5.5 win player. The only thing that's been holding back is he plays left field defense, but he does it so well, so.
And maybe he'll play center field if cannot hit the ball. Next one, Andrés Giménez. Zips has him for, which would be a career high, 151 games. 266, 336, 416, 115 WRC plus. 4.7.
I wrote this one.
You did write this one, and you said over.
I was very conservative in mind, saying, yeah, I think it'll be a little bit over. I think in podcast version merits, it will be considerably over. Because what have I got, like 3.5, something like that?
Last year, or the projection?
No, the projection's what,
4.7, yeah.
3.7?
That's pretty high.
Oh, 4.7? Yeah, that is high. Shit.
And it's almost all from his defense. Like last year, he was a 6.1 win player, which was insane. It was a 140 WRC plus. So it obviously sees him still playing really good defense.
defense plays. The thing I've been thinking about, and I mentioned this a little bit in the over-under piece I wrote, because like the way Fangraphs does defense is predicated on where you make plays a little bit, and will the being not shifting, how will the not shifting as much change that? Does that make sense? Like now that he's not making these, he's not having this crazy like impact across in a larger space of the field because he's just not allowed to play there anymore, or will that kind of normalize back? I don't know.
I'm struggling, especially players like Jimenez, who are going to the defensive guy is going to shift so much on that. Yeah, I don't know. I had him maybe under, like just barely under, because I think he's going to might hit better, but the defense they have him rated for, like 14.8, their defensive.
I mean, I understand the idea behind his offense slipping because yeah, he got hit a lot. He didn't walk very much, and he had a lot of really soft hits. I think as I read about, there were 58 times on base between, it was 38 hits with an expected batting average under 200 or 250 or something like that. And then another 25 times hit by a pitch, which is a lot of times on base. And like, if you remove some of those, I don't know why you would, but a lot of that stuff is luck based. It seems like I did a little digging on past projections and stuff. And it seems like that Zips thinks, getting hit by a pitch is, it's not like a skill, but it's something that's consistent probably because of where he stands. I think he'll still get the over, but the offense for him, honestly, is of any player, I think, on the Guardians this year, his offense is my biggest question mark of can he repeat that? Because if he can, that's insane.
Yeah, and two, be more comfortable on defense. And yeah, it'd be insane. All the projection system, like for all the Guardians players, because they were so aggressive, and part of that helped their BAPIP. It's more than just the ball fell in the right place every single time. But like when Zips and Steamer and everything sees a 353 BAPIP, they instantly just like drop that to the basement. Like that's obviously why he hit so much, but I don't think it is completely just luck. I think it's,
well, he's every fast
Guardians player. Yeah.
His sprint speed numbers are like in the 90s. So percentile wise, same thing with guys like Kwan, right? Like they definitely put pressure on defenses. They make their own luck to a degree. I don't think he'll have a 353 BABIP, but I think it'll still be something like a 325. I'm curious to see where BABIPs in general shift this year, if at all, because of the new shift rules. I don't know if it'll be a huge change, but like league wide BABIP last year was what? Keep on talking while I figure this out.
Andrés Giménez, very good at baseball, but not maybe as good. It also has him
290. Okay,
there you go. Walking and striking out basically the same amount, which again I think is interesting that he doesn't have. His strikeouts dropped so much last year, and that was a big reason. I mean, 5%, he was striking out a quarter of the time previously in a smaller sample, but I think it's interesting that Zips has him again. Like Stephen Kwan, it just thinks he's going to do the same thing he did last year as far as his plate approach. It's just the BABIP they dropped.
It really was the lowest BABIP in at least 10 years last year.
I mean, it was not fun. Even if it doesn't make a huge difference, just the optics of seeing a ball hit into a shift was always like, oh.
Well, I that know. Could have been something. He hit it hard. Fuck.
Yeah. There's a guy. There's the shortstop halfway in right field. He caught the ball. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a good time. So the next one, Miles Straw, who not good last year. 64 WRC plus.
No,
Zips has him. We've always said if he can hit, I think 85 WRC plus has been the number we've used in the past. If he can hit that, he'll be good. And that's what Zips has him at. 85 WRC plus, 2.3 WAR, 149 games. Like Zips, he's been playing. Consistent playing time, yeah. And even worse on defense, which I can understand because he was so good. I think he'll be that good on defense again. I just don't know if he's going to hit even as well as Zips has him at, like 2 home runs, 251 average. 313 slugging sounds about right for Miles Straw. But I mean, he's just got to hit enough to stick around in center field, and I think he would stick there. But I don't know if he'll do that. That's why I had under, I think.
You're hitting Chris the under on that one?
Yeah, I think Chris wrote it. He had the same thing. He also had under, did he?
You and Chris are both stupid. Honestly, I think he was so unlucky last year. I think he'll hit the over. I think he's going to have a pretty good year. What pretty good means in the context of one Miles Straw is a conversation to be had, obviously. He was, what, 2-win player last year with a 64 WRC plus.
Yeah, what's that? I think himself is wild.
truly crazy. Like he was one of the worst offensive players in all of baseball. I think he had a stretch there where he had like the worst month in the history of offense.
Yeah, that's pretty
or nice. Something like that. I think that he will be more like a 3-win player. I think he'll be closer to his 2021 than he was in 2022.
I think the biggest thing is he won't reach the playing time. I think he'll hit too bad. I think
that may be it. Yeah.
I think like Will Brennan is going to push the envelope a little bit. I think they just shift Stephen Kwan over or whatever. I think there's going to be enough players like that want to get Freeman and Arias in the outfield a little bit.
I don't know if they want to. It's just that hasn't been the way Cleveland has operated as a team for at least the last, honestly, probably since John Hart, right? Like they always like to have that one like sterling glove in center that really helps the rest of the defense come together, whether it's you go from Lofton to
Franklin Gutierrez, Death to Flying
Gutierrez, things. Obviously, Sizemore, Coco Crisp, more recently, other players like that.
Jason Kipnis in center field in the World Series.
Oh God. Michael Bourne as an actual choice of a person, like who is very much signed not for the fact that he sold, 57 bases one year, but because of his glove. It's not his fault. His hamstring turned into nothingness. So I feel like they care for the same reason that they hold on to, they want to make sure that their middle infielders are good defensively. They know where the bread is buttered. It's pitching. They need to have guys who can go get it. That's the only reason why I think he might still hit the 150-ish games played here. Like,
God, that's so many to watch him play offense.
Listen, I love
everything about Miles Straw, but watching him at the plate is not fun.
It's weird, awful.
Like even last year, he walked 9.1% of the time and struck out 14.6%. Like you see that. And I can see your point that maybe he's just unlucky. It's also that he hits the ball extremely light, but he doesn't have a terrible approach or anything. He's just, there is no good contact there.
I mean, his BABIP was 40 points lower than his career average last year. 40. Like, that alone. I don't know if he'll be at a 97 WRC. But like, if he could be, again, league average like that and hit the way he did in 2021 when we all going, what's going on over here? Like,
and they extended him, and that was looking good. I don't miss Phil May. And now I miss
Phil May. He may well be a big beneficiary of just the new shift rules. I don't know, but I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be more like a 2.5 or 3-win guy, just because I think that if it starts off poor, that'd be one thing. But his season, I think more than anyone else on the team, is really going to rely on a good April. Because if he starts getting to a funk again, then it's too funky. So,
that's basically where I think I'll be. Like me and Chris know what's going on with this Mayor guy.
Boo! I hate those guys.
Next one, Aniel De Los Santos, just kind of the lightning in a bottle out of nowhere reliever last year.
Yeah.
You had asked around before you were writing. Like,
actually, I get these innings after I finished writing it.
You what?
I technically had asked that after I finished writing it. But yes.
Yeah. It's just Zips has him for 62.3 innings, which, I mean, last year 53.1. But it's just hard to – I mean, Zips obviously has him pitching way worse, 4.33 ERA.
Yeah.
Like, you never expect that guy to come out of nowhere like that and pitch that well. So I get projections doubting him a little bit. But that's a lot of innings, especially if he pitches like that. Like, that's kind of the weird thing. Like, if he is that bad – which for
yes, Uber, it's very it's confusing projection.
I don't know what does it think he's Brian Shaw? That's basically a Brian Shaw line. Is 62 innings, mid 4s ERA. But I don't think those two things together are definitely not going to happen. I don't know. Man, I don't. There's just so many guys that have come through, been great for a year. We never see him again.
I know. The
Jeff Manships, if you will.
I mean, the thing is, so he threw 53 innings last year, right? And I mentioned this in the post, but there's 58-ish innings lying around that are not picked up right now because Shaw is gone. Now, removing for a second anyone who like is a starter, right? Like, obviously, Savali's going to throw more than 97 innings. Quantrill will probably throw a little more, but like these are all places where we had fill-in starters, right? When we start talking about, like guys like, I'm just trying to think of some names here, someone like Pilkington, right? He threw 58 innings last year, had 11 starts. Cody Morris, 5 starts, right? But I don't think it would be a stretch to say De Los Santos can get up to 60 innings pitched. I mean, that's 2 less than Sam Henches did last year, right? It's 3 less than Trevor Stephan did. It's 12 less than Class A. How many did Eli Morgan? 66. So
insane. Eli Morgan pitched 63?
Yeah, 66. Nick Sandin threw 44. So, like, there's innings out there, right? Like, Logan Allen threw 6. I don't know. Alex Young threw a third of an inning. Sandy Leon threw 2 innings. Let's be honest.
there's some innings laying around. We're going to go to some random people. It always happens.
I will say, I know I mentioned this in the post too. Like, he is very much This is something I mentioned a couple times last year, but I remember listening to the Defector podcast, Ray Ratto mentioning how you can tell when a team's going to be really good if they have those four killers in the bullpen, basically. And I think that Cleveland has certainly three.
That's Class A, Stefan, and Karinchak?
Oh, four, actually. Okay, sorry, I was going to say Henches as well. Yeah, I forgot about Karinchak for some reason. But yeah, Karinchak's going to throw more. He only threw 39 last year. But De Los Santos is very much that kind of dividing line between one of the other guys and one of the guys, right? And he was very good last year. He's very, you know, he doesn't have a great slider, but it really pairs well with his fastball. And like, you're not asking him to do a lot. Like, to be your sixth and seventh inning guy, he throws the ball hard. I think he has the second or third hardest fastball on the team, even more than James Karinchak. Yeah, just by a hair, he throws the ball harder than James Karinchak. So whatever,
just throw him out there. He'll get there.
So I don't know. I think he'll hit the, because his, what was his projection? 0.8 or something like that.
Yeah. Which again, yeah, it's a weird one, just because of how.
Oh, incredibly weird one. But like, the thing is, and I mentioned this in the post too. Like, getting more than a win and a half out of a relief pitcher is insane, or two wins, I guess, out of a relief pitcher is crazy, right? Like, Class A was the second best closer in baseball. I think it was probably a relief pitcher in baseball. He was 2.4. Stefan was 1.7. Like, you know, Sanchez was 1.1. Sanchez was worth a win. Same thing with Karinchak. So, I think he'll pass it just because I don't think that we're like. He's going to be much of a one-hit wonder. He's not old. He's, what, 27? So we should be getting the best of him now. But,
and I think he's injured right now, isn't he? Or for some reason he's not pitching? I don't know if they said officially that he's injured, but he's, like, not pitching for some reason.
We just checked the RotoWire news. De Los Santos struck out 2 in a perfect inning to earn the win Thursday over the Rays, 9/30/2022. Okay, this is useless information.
Thank you, RotoWire.
Thank you, RotoWire.
Yeah, I won't throw that out there because I don't know if he is, but I think he's injured or something. But yeah, I think the over on this one, maybe not as good an ERA, or a better ERA, but less innings, I think. I think he pitches better than that, but he doesn't hit the 50 mark. I just think somebody else is going to, like, I mean, then they got Gattis, Pilkington, Curry. They got all these guys who are formed, who they can just, like, same pinches him and put him in. And then Tim Haines.
Oh, no, that's very much part of it, right? Is like, there's so many just guys they have. Like, where does he fall on that? And like, I think the thing that benefits him is that who is the man who loves his guys the most? That's right, Terry Francona. And Eniel De Los Santos came and answered the bell so consistently last year that, and was again really good. I mean, some of his extrapolated numbers are a bit hairier than you'd like, and even.
If you don't allow the runs, you don't allow the runs.
Sucks.
That's a reliever, right? Yeah.
Well, but like, you look at his numbers too. Like, his, like, a lot, like, you can pick and choose all you want, but like, I think he gave up a run like second to last game, and like that lifted his ERA over 3 for the rest of the year. Like, if we were talking about a guy who had a 2.90 ERA, but again, we're talking about a guy who has a 3.04 ERA with a 2.62 fielding independent pitching, who throws a 95 mile an hour fastball and a mediocre curve or a slider. Is that what we want out of a relief pitcher? No, I'd like him to be a little bit better in every single way. All right, have a strikeout rate more close to, what was it last year, like in the 30s effectively, and he was at 28.4. That's what I think that would be the ideal, right? Just have 4 or 5 guys who can strike out 30% of the guys they face, if not more, and go from there. So he's not that, so he just kind of has to hope that Francona likes him and he doesn't get hurt, basically.
So our last one is the one I just did today. It was Tyler Freeman. Obviously, he was around more than you probably think last year. He graduated from prospect status, but also didn't play a whole lot. He's in 24 games, mostly just like pinch hitting and playing substitute defense. But Zips has him, 97 WRC plus, 1.8 WAR, getting in 98 games. I took the over on this one. Not a huge amount, but I don't know. I just believe in Tyler Freeman. I like guys who are elite at one thing in the minors. And I think he wasn't extremely elite at contact. Like Gabriel Arias, who's the main one he's competing with for playing time. I don't like Arias. I think he can succeed, but he was never great at anything besides defense in the minors. Like, I don't know if he's going to pan out as a hitter. He reminds me a lot of like the Greg Allen type hype we had, that he was great on defense, and just there's some things there about his bat once in a while. But Tyler Freeman is legit elite at contact and not striking out in the minors. And even last year when he wasn't great at the plate, we saw that he had a decent contact rate. His CSW percentage is called strike and whiff. So just how many strikes of his own doing he had was really good too. I just think the first sights we saw of him of not being immediately overwhelmed in the majors was a good sign for a prospect. As long as he can just get the playing time somewhere, whether it's just an injury or they do slip him in the outfield somewhere or Amed Rosario gets traded or whatever. But I think he gets over 98 games somehow. I think he pushes the envelope more than Arias does. Even if they start with Arias as the guy ahead of him, I think Freeman can be good enough and just make so much contact that he can just push the issue. He needs to get in there. And then be over 1 point anywhere. Obviously, I think he would be over the WRC plus projection. I think he can get to like basically a Stephen Kwan that doesn't walk as much, which is that's a big gap because a big part of
yeah, what that's Kwan not good at all. Walk, I don't want that player at all.
That player's not very good. 110. I said 110, 115 WRC plus. I think it can be that, and that's not going to get like MVP votes, but it's enough to solidify a position somewhere with also playing really good defense. So.
I disagree. I do not think he will get one.
You're fired. I can mute you now.
I don't. I don't know, man. 437 plate appearances.
Over.
That's massive. So many. That's like I don't know, dude.
He's like, so good. Have you seen? Like, I just watched on MLB Film Room because you can just queue up videos and just like get right to the hit part. Like, he's so good at covering the plate with his bat and not swinging at garbage. And even like some really good pitches on the outside, he gets to everything. It's just so fun to watch him hit. So I don't know.
But. Look, I'm all for obviously rooting for the continued method of the way they're developing players, but also I'm a huge hater. No. The contact thing is great, and I think that there's a chance he could turn into a good player. I don't think it's in 2023. I think that he still weighs 3 pounds, and he's just a wee little boy.
Have you seen pictures from spring training? That he's got
everyone's wonderfully shredded. Matt, come on!
Like, I mean, he's extra wonderfully shredded.
We're not going to start here talking about baseball players' forearms and butts. He is in the best shape of his life. They always have good forearms and butts. It's the way baseball is, all right?
No, it's his neck. That's a Jim Tomey-ass neck he's got now. That's a powerful neck. That is at least a 6-home-run neck
all he's right. got there. I will hold out hard judgment, but I just think that he'd be closer to like a 1.5 wins because that's I don't know if he's getting 437. That's so many plate appearances. It also thinks he's going to get 4 home runs. Where? How? What? This is insane.
Power. Oh, he's going to run. He's going to make so much contact. A couple will fly out.
That's not how any of that works.
That's how it works. You hit the ball a bunch. Just bunt a bunch of times.
You can't take my Kwan
Math says eventually some
and
will
fold
fly
it
out.
Over into a man who's not like him at all. It doesn't make any sense.
It all works.
We can also do it's Josh like that. Bell since it'll be up by the time this posts. So if you want to, I don't know.
There you go.
But we can circle back for Freeman. Yeah. I don't think we're going to do 1.1. I don't think he'll get 1.8 wins in other places. I'm sorry. Some of these other numbers, I agree with you. I think he'll hit better than 263, 328, 349.
Yeah, that's a given.
I think he'll have a WRC plus over 100. How far over? Yeah, who cares?
Roughly 10 or 15 over. Yeah.
Like,
I agree. Yeah, like, good call.
Right. Maybe.
just not the plate appearance. That's fair.
But. Yeah, with the BABIP question mark is the real big one, like as far as his actual average and everything like that. But
his BABIP is never super high in the minors. I mean, they're all higher in the minors, but his is never like gaudy. I don't think so. I don't think he has elite speed either. He's just
I take that back. He has a 357 in Double A and 350 in Single A. And,
well,
372 in Low A. So I don't know. It's not high.
They're all high in the minors. They're all up there.
Exactly. They don't know how to play defense there.
They don't know what they're doing. Yeah, I think we'll save Josh Bell as a teaser for next week.
Next week you can listen to us talk about a week old article. Ooh,
that's what these were. These were
that's what all this bullshit is. That's true.
It's spring training, Merritt. What do you want from me, Shane Bieber? We can only talk so much about
people.
His
just
two
want
innings.
Our mediocre content as I sit in this big comfy chair. All right.
I wonder if our devoted listeners noticed there is no more loud creaking of a chair in the background because
the biggest news in the world right now. I got a new chair, everyone. So
can you give us a quick walk back in your chair right now?
Look, I'm moving my chair right now. Oh, I'm moving God. It all around. Look at that, everyone. It's silent.
And again, for anybody listening, you made it all the way to the end here. Congratulations. You just won $1 million. No, there's going to be a new podcast in a couple weeks. We're going to keep doing this every week again, but for a little while it'll still be under Covering the Corner podcast, but eventually the name will change. You'll just see a new podcast pop up. Just go ahead and click and listen to it again to let the old feeds know that we're still here and you still want the podcast downloaded. That would be great. For now, find us on Covering the Corner on Twitter, on Facebook, coveringthecorner.com. Nailed it. I am Matt RLY on Twitter. Merritt is at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch.
I might delete my Twitter account. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, well, we'll see between now and then. Talk to you next week, Merritt.
Bye.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hello, I'm Nilay Patel, the editor-in-chief of The Verge and host of Decoder, a business podcast where I interview CEOs about big ideas, the problems that come from those ideas, and how they make decisions. It is also surprisingly about org charts. It comes up a lot. We're launching a new limited series that we're calling the Centennial Series, where I talk to CEOs of companies that are over 100 years old, like Xerox, Barnes & Noble, and more. There's no 100-year-old company that's without its struggles, and it's been fascinating to talk to these CEOs about which parts of these companies' history are important and which parts they can let go. A little spoiler for you, if a company is over 100 years old, there's a lot of drama to talk about. It's been a good time. You can listen to the Centennial Series right in the Decoder feed. New episodes of Decoder are out on Tuesday, and the Centennial Series is out on Thursdays. Check it out. We think you're really going to like it. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts.